John Revel has joined me now. Good afternoon, John.
Hello, Mark. I'm no Patrick Swayze, I should make that quite clear.
Well, certainly nor am I either. So I don't think I've got the lips or the ability to lift a woman above my head.
Well, certainly, so. Yeah, I was going to say, you wouldn't want to try lifting me above your head because you'd be in big trouble.
Well, I mean, maybe we could give that a try, but it's not great radio.
You can't. It's not great radio, no.
No. So, yeah, maybe just the sound of crashing in the studio later. So you've joined us to talk about Igglestock this afternoon.
Yes.
Now, this sounds to me like the most fantastic name for a festival possible. So tell us about Igglestock. How did this come about?
Well, it's the brainchild of two ladies. I live in Ickleton, and it's the brainchild of two ladies that live there, Katie Crawford and Lucy Davidson. And they came up with this idea to create a family-friendly festival to raise money, basically, for the kids' playground. So behind the Ickleton Lion, which is the pub in our village, it's a beautiful village, by the way. I don't know if you've been, but it's a lovely village. Behind the pub is the Rec. And it's fantastic. It's a big park. And within that park, there's a kids' play area that basically has seen better days. So the idea of this festival that the girls have put together is to raise money. It's a not-for-profit event. And all the money that is made or raised on the day will go towards reinvigorating the kids' play area. And, of course, it's not only for children in Ickleton, it's all the surrounding villages can come down from Duxford or Chesterford or wherever, come down and you can come down and have a go if you want, you know. And you'd be more than welcome. So that's basically it. And I think they've done an incredible job because I used to work in the light. I used to do this for a living, one of my many hats that I've worn over the years. I created the London Blues Festival, or co-created the London Blues Festival, which is now a big event. It's at the O2 next month, and 35,000 people. And my company was part of Live Nation, and Live Nation, the biggest music promoters in the world.
So you've got a bit of a track record.
Yeah,
this kind of thing,
so they kind of roped me in on this one, the old sucker punch. You know?
Oh, we know John.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
where does he live? So, and I'm absolutely delighted to help them and advise them as much as I could. And I think they've done an incredible job. They really have. And the way they've approached it is very much as a family-friendly event. And that's the emphasis is on that. But not only that, it's on... They've taken it up market because some of the offerings, you know, the food offering is, I think, outstanding. You know, I've been to hundreds of festivals, hundreds of events over the last 10 years or so, and some of the food offerings are pretty poor, and you've probably experienced the same, and I'm sure
Absolutely.
A lot of the listeners have experienced the same. You know, they all jump on this street food bandwagon, and nothing resembles street food, and some of it is very poor. However, some of the stuff that they've got going on here is quite spectacular. I'm just going to give you a little headline on this one, if you don't mind. So they've
Not
got bread and meat and steak and honour, which you all know.
I'm a big fan of both of those, both general terms of bread and steaks, and also in terms of our Cambridge
and yes,
offering.
And they are a really high-end offering. Okay, so then also, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, they've got Stem and Glory, who were winners of the Best Newcomers in Cambridge Food and Drink Awards this year. Over and above that, there's a fantastic Thai restaurant in Wickham Bonham. They're coming down. And also Jack Gelato's, which has just recently opened. I was in there only the other day with my wife and son, and I believe it's an excellent gelato.
I have to say that I've been to Italy a few times and always make sure I have a gelato on there, and it's now nice that we've got so many different places doing gelato in Cambridge to the same standard, one of which is Jack's.
So they're all going to be there. So you can it starts to build a picture of what this is going to be like. This is not like a little village fete, and I'm not undermining village fetes because they have a very important role within village life. But I think the girls have just taken it up a whole new level.
I have to say though, when I think festival, I think live music.
There is live music.
You have live music.
We
as
have
well?
Two stages, so we have a main stage and an acoustic stage. So on the main stage. So it starts early. So it's 12 o'clock, doors open, and it finishes at 6. So it's not a kind of an all-night thing.
Really,
otherwise,
really
I'd...
aiming towards the family side.
Exactly.
Of things,
that's very much family-focused. And also, as I said, I live in a village, so if it went on too late, I'd be complaining, you know, because I have to be in bed by 10.
You can't have it both ways, can you?
You cannot. So, two live stages. We have a main stage, and on the main stage, opening up the main stage, are the Rocking Ukuleles from Ely. Have you seen these guys?
I haven't, no, but it sounds amazing.
They are. They're hilarious. It's about 25 to 35 ukulele players. And they do a whole raft of different songs. And they're just fantastic fun.
I have to say that, 105 actually sent me for a ukulele lesson for Summer Saturday earlier this year, and I had a ukulele lesson live on the radio, which is probably 20 minutes of the most excruciating radio anyone has ever heard.
How'd you get on? It's hard, isn't it?
I had to learn Lean on Me, which I had to do in 20 minutes, and I got about half the notes right, I think, in that time, so I'm hoping these guys will have all the notes right come Saturday.
Not necessarily in the right order. But yeah. if you come over on Saturday, bring a ukulele and you can have a go. We'll slip you on the side of the stage. Because there's so many of them, they won't even notice.
I'll just be up there miming, just the ukulele smiling away.
That's all you have to do. So, yeah, show opens with the rocking ukuleles on the main stage. And then we have the hanging baskets. So within our village, we have a lot of musicians. And there's a guy called Martin Newnham, who is a brilliant guitarist, but also is a music teacher. And he has a band called the Hanging Baskets. And they are absolutely fantastic. You can just check them out on YouTube, and they're brilliant. So Martin's going to be there. And then bringing up the rear is the Frog Street Five. And the reason it's called the Frog Street Five is because in Ickleton there's a street called Frog Street. And all the members in that band are from Ickleton, of which I'm one. So I sit at the back.
A man of many talents.
Keeping time badly on the drums. But that's a great little band. In fact, we've got rehearsals this evening at 5:30. Then we have a second stage, which is the acoustic stage. And kicking that off are two young ladies from Cambridge, Ellie Dixon and Sophie Winter, who are brilliant. Again, check them out on YouTube. They've got their own individual take on popular music. So guitars, they have a uke as well, which is great. I love them. I think they're fantastic. We have a guy called George Frake. So if you're a musician and you play guitar, you've got to come and see this guy because he's a fantastic guitarist. And he's got his own take on a bluesy, bluesgrass, folky vibe going on. He's very, very good. And bringing up the rear on the acoustic stage is a young man called Jay Williams. So earlier in the year, about a couple of months ago, we had a beer festival in the village. And I did all the sound and production for that. And Jay was one of the acts. So this kid comes on and he blew everybody away. So he's got a bit of an Ed Sheeran thing going on. So he's got a loop pedal and he had two microphones. And he was fantastic. And I was stunned to find out that he was only 15.
Wow.
Because his interaction with the audience was brilliant. His song choice was fantastic. Very mature song choice for a 15-year-old kid. And this is the stuff they do. You've obviously seen Ed Sheeran do this kind of loop pedal thing. And it's very, very difficult. There's a lot going on. And this kid had it cracked. And I was stunned because I was speaking to his dad afterwards. And he said, yeah, he's only 15. I think he's just turned 16 now. So George is coming back by popular demand. Jay is coming back by popular demand. So definitely worth coming just to watch Jay.
And I guess an ideal opportunity for both him to actually get some more exposure and hopefully work with a big audience as well as people to come and enjoy him.
Yeah, and he loves it. He knows how to work a crowd, I tell you, for a 15 or 16-year-old. We couldn't get him off. I have to fade his mic out in the end.
It makes you feel old, doesn't it? I wish I'd had half that much confidence at that age.
Yes. So that's the musical offering, which is going to be brilliant. So so come along and bring your picnic blankets and plonk it down in front of the stages. And where the acoustic stage is, we've got, it's right by the tea tent. So there's lovely marquees, lots of marquees going on, and lots of lovely tea and cakes and lots of lovely homemade stuff. And also, hot numbers are provided in all the coffee, so just down the road from here.
Yes, the other end of Gwinder Street,
yes.
Of course.
So if you put a long record on, you could probably run down there, get a cup of coffee and run back.
I'm not sure the studio would approve of me trying something like that. Maybe two or three tracks back to back, but knowing my luck, the studio door would shut and I'd never get back in.
There's a really... do you remember Simon Bates from Radio 1? He tells this story. He was working at a radio station in Australia. And he literally did that, but that was back in the days when they used to use vinyl. And he put a long track on, and threw it, just ran across and get a cup of coffee. They had it on the radio station on in so he's in the queue waiting for his coffee, and he then hears the record has stuck and it's just clicking away, click click. So obviously you don't get that problem anymore. So brilliant coffee offering, of course, from Hot Numbers, who probably make the best coffee in Cambridge, if not the east of England.
I couldn't possibly comment. I'm sure there are other coffee are available in Cambridge.
No, you're a commercial station. You can say what you like. It's only the BBC you're not allowed to say.
Well, as long as somebody from Hot Numbers runs down the road with their sponsorship money to
that's
to
right.
promote
or
it in
brings
the same
coffee,
direction.
Then we're
yeah,
happy
I'm,
to talk
I'm
about
I'm
that
easy
one.
Either way, yeah.
Okay. So, drinks, of course. We've got a fantastic bar with drinks from Brewboard, Ripcord and Lakota Craft Ales, Cambridge Cider Company, Pinkster Gin. Have you seen Pinkster Gin? That's a pretty cool looking.
I haven't, no, but I do quite like a little bit of gin.
Oh, well, you've got to try this. And in fact, the guy that owns Pinkster Gin lives in the village. So you can see what type of village Ickleton is.
It sounds like the place to be.
It's all going on, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's all going on. I don't think it's keys on the table type vibe, you know what I mean?
That's a relief.
But there's a lot of great stuff going on.
Well, it definitely sounds like the place to be. And how are you going to fit it all into 6 hours? I'm still slightly lost.
Well, yes, I'm now slightly worried about it myself, looking at this running order. And just as we said as well, Mark, it's really a family thing. And there's so much stuff for the kids. You know, Katie and Lucy have done a brilliant thing for kids. There's an animal area with giant rabbits and baby wallabies that they can pet and all this type of stuff. We've got the obviously got the ubiquitous bouncy castle and the face painting and the balloon modelling. There's swing boats, storytelling. And in fact, the kids have got their own bus, food bus, where they can just go and have their food and grown-ups are not allowed. So that's quite a cool thing, like a big bus and the kids can just go in there. So
That sounds great, yeah. Unless you actually need to look after the kids, which sounds quite dangerous, but I'm sure it will be well managed.
Yes, and also for the bigger kids, there's classes, there's hula dancing, yoga and belly dancing.
So, I've always fancied myself as a belly dancer person.
Well, you know, bring you and you can have a go. You can I can do a bit of face painting for you. We get all that going for you, don't we?
Excellent.
And also, if you've got any cash, spare cash, there's stools, there's jewellery and homeware and ceramics and art and children's clothes. And so there's a whole raft of things going on. And I was over there today, and the way they're laying the field out is going to look great. It's a really nice, you know, intimate vibe. So it's not this huge open field. It's, you know, they've really thought about this, and it looks terrific when I was there today when they were setting up.
But everything you expect from a proper festival, from the sounds of things.
Well, it is, you know. I mean, I think it's very grown up and very mature. You know, as I said, having been in this part of this game for a long time and seen some real not very good events, this is looks like it's going to be great. Can I just give a little plug for the tickets? Is that all right?
Yes, please do.
So if you want to buy tickets in advance, just go to www.icklestock.co.uk. So tickets are £4 in advance. That's a bargain.
I mean, for the amount of stuff you've just said, I can't believe
and,
it, frankly.
Or you can buy them on the day, which is £6 on the day. 5 to 12-year-olds, it's £1. Under 5, over 65, it's free. So you can't say any fairer than that. So it's on Saturday afternoon, midday, doors open at Ickleton, Ickelstock.
And, place to be. And that's ickelstock.co.uk if people want more details
for
right, tickets. It's Cambridge 105 Afternoons with Mark Leversidge up until 4 o'clock this afternoon. So just before the travel there, I was chatting to John Revel about Ickelstock, which he's helped to put together, and he's also playing in a band in. Well, I think we got the idea that he's a man of many talents, but our station...
You haven't heard me play the drums.
I'm very sorry, I'm going to potentially miss that because I've got a dash between hosting the film show here at Saturday lunchtime and then I'm off to proms in the park in the evening.
So, are you?
I will be going past Ickelstock's. If I can try and call in, then I will, but I think maybe slightly too early for when you're actually going to be on stage.
Wind down your window as you drive past, you'll hear it.
I will do.
Dull thud in the background.
But it's not just playing music like that and helping to organise Ickelstock that you've got on your CV. Our station manager, Tim, sent me a list of your experience, and it was, I have to say, slightly intimidating having someone like yourself sat on the other side of the desk this afternoon. You've been about a bit, shall we say.
Well, yes.
In the nicest possible way.
Yes, yeah. Okay. In the nicest possible terms.
In a way that I'd be very jealous of, frankly. So... I believe I am not the first DJ with slightly reddish hair that you've been sat in the same room as.
No, but you're much nicer.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll pay you later.
Yes, no, my background is radio. I mean, I worked in radio for about 30-odd years. And
so how did you get into it then?
I started out, when I started, there were very, very few radio stations. So in London, I lived in London, I come from London, and there were literally two radio stations, and that was Capital. You had BBC London, obviously Radio 1 and Radio 2, but you had not a cat in hell's chance of getting into any of those stations. And I actually wrote to Richard Branson and said to him, here's an idea, Richard, why don't you have an in-store radio station in the Virgin Megastore? So they had this record store on Oxford Street, which was huge, absolutely massive. And I thought, wow, you could have a little radio station in there, you know, with DJs, but run it like a radio station. And he came back and said, yeah, it's a brilliant idea. Come and see us. And that was the start of it, really. And then, so I started to build a relationship with Richard and the Virgin Group and the Virgin brand. And then they won the national license for Virgin Radio, which was an AM license. And I got the job of program director. So I set that up, essentially. I set all the programming side up from Virgin Radio. So it's very tricky then because we were on AM.
How do you go about doing like something like that from scratch then?
And we only had 3 months. They fired the previous management team, and I came in with some other management, with a new managing director and stuff. And it was originally going to be in Woking, because there was an existing radio station. So I went down to Woking. I had a look at this radio station. I went straight back to London. I said, look, you know, this is a national radio station. You know, you can't ask Bruce Springsteen to get on the train and go down to Woking for an interview. And so everybody agreed. So we then put the studios in Soho in London. So we had a very, very short period of time, 4 months. Radio Authority gave us an extra month to build all the studios, to hire everybody, all the presenters, and just get all the infrastructure in place and to get going. But we managed to do it, and we got on the air. And we went on the air at 12:15, because that was the frequency, 12:15 a.m. And we built that up into a really successful station. And we had about 4.2 million listeners, which wasn't bad considering we were on AM, which is a very inferior frequency for playing music on.
Yes, very lucky, of course, that we now have the luxury of being both on FM and DAB and on the internet as well.
There you go. You know, so it's a whole different ball game now. So we did very well. And then I then left to go and join Chris Evans at Radio 1. So I knew Chris. So we worked at the BBC together. We worked at GLR in London, which was a BBC station in London. We were both producers there. And I'd previously worked with Chris at another radio station as well, so I knew him. And when he came to London, I was the first person that he worked with. And he was doing The Big Breakfast at that point. So his profile went through the roof. He suddenly became very famous. I always knew he was going to be very famous, because even working with him as a producer, he was very different from anybody I'd ever met before. And we used to go like a house on fire, and creatively we had the same kind of thoughts and processes. And he phoned me up one day and said, look, I've had a call from Matthew Bannister, who was running Radio 1. And they were having a terrible time. Matthew had gone in and changed the station, and they'd lost about 4 or 5 million listeners, which is quite a thing.
Yes.
You remember that? So he said, they want me to do the breakfast show, what do you think? And I said, well, yeah. I said, but if you're not in control of it, you know, you're just going to suffer the same fate, because I think Steve Wright had done it, and quite a few people, I think Mark Ratcliffe, and they'd all had a go at it. And it wasn't going anywhere. And I said, I think they've got a problem with the music and various other things. So he said, well, look, will you come and produce it? And I said, well, no, not really, because I'm a program director now. I've got a suit and everything. And he said, well, look, if I pay you a load of money. I said, well, okay, getting interesting. And he said, well, what about if we did it as a independent production? And I said, well, that would be really interesting. And I said, but I don't think they'll let you. The BBC have never allowed the Radio 1 breakfast show to be done as an independent production. He said, well, to be honest, we've got them over a barrel. They'll do anything we want. And so that was kind of it, really. And they agreed to that. So that's when I then left to start Ginger. And we started Ginger Productions. And we produced the Radio 1 breakfast show as an independent production, which was quite a thing, really. And so I had these two hats, because I was running the company. So I was managing director of the business. I was executive producer of The Breakfast Show. And then Chris started to pull me in on the air. Because I'd presented before, but yeah. I wasn't mad keen on presenting, to be honest. But, I used to do it. And he pulled me in on the air. And I suddenly... And he had Dan and Holly were part of the team. And I suddenly became more of a focal point within the team. And then, we built this kind of alter ego Johnny Boy, and that's what I became, and that was it. So I was doing that. And then from there, we started TFI Friday, which I used to run. So I also ended up on that as well, doing Johnny Boy and the Wheels of Steel, going in and out of the breaks. So mainly because he didn't have to pay me, because obviously I was getting paid because I was running the company as well. So that was great fun as well. And that was an amazing experience, because when we did that, the whole ethos behind, when we sat down and started planning TFI Friday, because I don't know if you remember The Tube, which was a brilliant music show.
Yes.
So
just about old enough to remember that.
Yeah, and it was fantastic, that Friday night, that Friday evening thing. And it was all live as well, and the bands were live. And so I said to Chris, look, what we should try and do is not emulate The Tube, but carry on the torch that the Tube had created with fantastic bands, live music. So he agreed with that. And I said to him, look, the only thing is, what we shouldn't do is do it in a TV studio, because I don't know if you've been into a TV studio, but they're very sanitized places, they're tiny little speakers, it's not very loud. And so we found these, it was an old, it was studios actually, but a big warehouse. And I went in with the producer, with the director and the production manager. As soon as we walked in, we went, wow, this is it. This is amazing. And we could get 300 people in there. And we built the permanent set. You know, we had the stage set in the middle of the round. You probably remember that. And there were three sections to that. So one stage was live, one was being struck, and one was being set up. And then that was a bit of history then. So that, because I think, you know, for those 4 or 5 years that we did that, I think it was very kind of pivotal in a lot of people's lives for a Friday evening. They would always watch TFI Friday before going out.
Absolutely. I think in mine as well. So, yeah. I mean, it sounds like a fantastic career. As I've got you as a captive audience, just before I have to let you go, if yep. I could take one piece of advice from you, as a, just someone just starting out in a sort of second career in radio myself, what would you suggest? It sounds like just tearing up the rule book is the way to go.
Well, the issue I have with radio at the moment in this country is, I mean, from a commercial radio point of view, if you look at commercial radio, they're just two big players now, and that's Global and Bauer. And they own all the commercial stations. And they've taken this stance where they're just, instead of taking talent, like fresh talent like yourself, or
thank you very much.
Well, you know, just guys that really, or girls that love radio. That, yeah, I loved radio. Radio, I was obsessed with radio from a very young age. And it was in my blood. And Chris was the same. He absolutely, you know, if you cut him in half, it's radio all the way through. You know, although he does a bit of telly. Not very successfully lately, obviously, but he does, you know, when back in the day when he was on it, he was brilliant. And he, the trouble is the big commercial operators now have taken to just using personalities or names. You know, Magic, you know, have just taken on Ronan Keating to do the breakfast show there. You know, I know Ronan, a lovely bloke. He's a singer. He's not a radio guy. You know, but they stuck him on because he's a name and he's a draw. And I think the problem is that there's very few places where people like yourself can hone, you know, your craft. And this is why this is, you know, 105 is brilliant, because you can come here and work it out. And then you just have to work out what you want to do within, you know, you're the film guy, right? You were saying.
I am, yes.
Yeah,
I am the movie evangelist.
And if that's your passion,
Cambridge, it is.
You know, if that is your passion, then that's where you need to focus, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to be. You know, because, you know, the BBC, God bless them, they still exist and they still have room for, you know, critics, you know, to come in and do that type of thing. And they have specialist programs. Trouble with commercial radio now, they don't have any specialist programs. So back in the day when I was starting out, you know, they would have a film program or they would have a specialist program. They don't do any of that anymore. They just rotate the same 350 songs.
And this, of course, my seamless link to remind listeners that our own film program, Bums on Seats, is on Saturday at 12, which I'll be hosting, reviewing God's Own Country, Wind River, and The Limehouse Golem. So, thank you for helping
we're
me.
We're almost a double act now. Almost a double act.
I'm going to get you back, frankly. Thank you so much for coming in this afternoon, John. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you.
So, can I just give it... So, Icklestock.co.uk.
Yeah, for those who missed it earlier on, Icklestock.co.uk, Saturday, yeah. 12 till 6, bands, food, the whole kit and
caboodle. Big family, big, beautiful family event. Come down. I think the weather's going to be with us as well.